Hi, everyone. This is the How to Lower Your Tax Bill podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Hutchins. I'm a financial and tax advisor in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And the goal of this podcast is to help you listeners get educated on different tax strategies that you can implement to improve your tax situation immediately. Each episode, we'll break down useful tax tips you can use to save money, no matter what your personal or business income situation. Because our motto is, keep more of what you earn. So let's get into today's episode. Welcome to another episode of How to Lower Your Tax Bill. I'm your host, Terrence Hutchins, and we are going to play a recording today of a webinar that I did with my tax partner, David Stevens. This is going to be going over the new One Big Beautiful Bill, the tax provisions in it, how it impacts individuals and also businesses. We will get into some of the strategy on future episodes around how it might affect you specifically in relation to keeping more of what you earn. This week is part two. Hopefully this is educational, and we will talk to you next week.
Hey guys, David Stevens here, Stevens Capital Partners, and I'm here with Terrence Hutchins. He is our Managing Director of Business and Tax Advisory. Terrence, really excited to go through some of the parts of the One Big Beautiful Bill. And a hot topic that we saw in the news a lot over the last several months was, of course, the SALT deduction cap increase, right?
Yep.
So that was something that was talked about quite a bit. So where did we land on that?
So that was actually a big thing that had been going back and forth on iterations. In the past, the cap was $10,000. So state and local taxes. So that's your real estate taxes. That's your sales taxes and your state taxes. So if you're going to get a $10,000 cap on that, a lot of high income states like California, New York, New Jersey, they were complaining about this. Well, now they've increased that from $10,000 up to $40,000. So a huge win for those, especially high income states. Now, from our vantage point, there's a lot of planning that will go around this. There was an additional tax deduction or credit called the pass-through entity tax. So for business owners out there, we're going to now have to manage how much are we going to take for that pass-through entity tax credit versus your state and local. Since your cap has gone up, we need to be able to help you strategically determine how much you want to maximize, because ultimately we want to keep more of your money in your pocket. So that's a big win for people in high income states. Now, caveat, if you make over $500,000, you lose out on that. It starts getting phased out. All right. So
how long does this go? This applies through when?
So this is actually going to go through 2028. All right. So what we're looking at internally is, hey, we're going to have a four-year tax plan. Some of these provisions are permanent. Some of them are up until 2028. So good point pointing that out, David, because not all of these are going to be forever. As next election comes up, there are going to be whole new conversations on what's going to be extended and what won't be.
And now here's another big topic, Terrence, that we heard a lot about. And again, this video today is not political at all. We're just talking about facts, right? That's all we're looking at, facts and your money, how it affects you. But tips, right? We heard a lot about tips. Where did we actually end up on tips? How does it work? Yeah. Matter of fact, before you share that, I talked to a waitress the other day, my wife and I, as we were out eating.
Yeah.
And I said, let me ask you a question. It was interesting to me because I asked her, hey, do you know a little bit about the bill that just passed and how that affects you? She goes, absolutely. Here's how it works. And here's how much money I'm going to give back. I've already ran the numbers.
Nice.
Isn't that incredible? And so I said, just curious, if it's something that you normally look at, do you normally look at tax law as it pertains to you? She goes, never in my life, but I've seen it in the news so much.
Yeah.
So I've been keeping up with it. And all of the staff here, we know about it. I'm the resident expert. I've been sharing with all the other staff. I thought that was pretty neat. So
you'd like to get her number. We're always looking for good quality people.
Part-time job, right?
But to her point, this was a provision that said the first 25,000 of tips that you make for married, 12.5 if you're single, you actually get to exclude that on your taxes. So that's what's called an above the line deduction. But it doesn't matter if you itemize or take the standard, that'll be an additional deduction that you're eligible for. Now, obviously we know how we are. Everyone's trying not to pay taxes. So they did add a provision that said, these are regularly tipped jobs. All right. Because I know a lot of people were going to be like, hey, you know what? I used to make 10 grand just regular, but now that's considered a tip. And it has to be voluntary by the customer. It's the same price, but now 10% is going to be a tip. The IRS is going to come in and try to adjust that. And obviously people are still going to push the envelope, I'm sure. So there's probably some additional guidance we will need to hear back from the IRS on that. That also goes through 2028 as well. Actually, a correction on the SALT cap, that's going to go through 2030. So a little bit longer for that one, but this one's going to go through 2028 on the tip side.
Excellent. Okay. And how about the car loan interest deduction? This is really interesting. This is pro U.S. assembled vehicles, right? Let's talk about that.
For sure. Now, one other point that also has the same income cap is actually overtime as well. Okay. So overtime, if I have overtime, I don't pay tax on that up to $25,000 or half, $12,500 if I'm single. All right. So that was another kind of extension of the, if you think about the tax and overtime, those go together. I can include up to $25,000 of income if I'm married. My cap, though, is $300,000 of income. So once I'm over that cap, it starts getting phased down. The car loan interest, that is a $10,000 deduction up to that you can claim if you have a U.S. assembled car, all right? And that's going to go till 2028 as well. So if I buy a car that was assembled here in the U.S. and it's not a salvage title, it's not a lease purchase, and it's not a refinance either, all right? Then I can deduct a little bit of interest on my car loan as far as the interest is concerned there.
All right. Now let's look at some other areas. We've got charitable giving, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the changes for those folks who are charitably inclined and like to give?
Yeah. If you recall back in 2020 and 2021, whenever COVID was rampant and people were looking to get charitable deductions, so they actually gave a $300 deduction. Say, hey, look, if you give away $300, we're going to give you this extra tax deduction, regardless if you itemize. Because generally, you have to itemize your deduction to get a tax benefit for any charitable contributions. They've actually brought this back to a degree. They said, even if you take this $31,500 standard deduction and you give away $2,000, we're going to let you deduct that $2,000. It's half that if you're single. So that just allows people to get a little bit more of a benefit if they're charitably inclined and they don't itemize their deductions. They also adjusted this to say, hey, for you high income earners, the value of your charitable deduction to offset the first half of 1% doesn't get counted. So for example, if I make $100,000, I itemize the deductions, the first $500 or half of 1%, I can't claim. So if I give away $10,000, I'm only going to be able to claim $9,500. So that's a slight adjustment on that. So that'll just require a little bit of due diligence, specifically for high earners. I know in our firm, we do a lot of donor advised funds, or we do bunching together of deductions. So that's something that you'll just have to add into your strategy there.
How about the new Trump accounts? Talk to us about this. This is, again, something brand new.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys are going for the fifth one on the team there, David, but if you did, and you had a kid born between 2025 and 2028, all right, you're going to get a one-time Trump account deposit. So that's essentially the government saying, hey, we're going to set up an IRA for your kid. We're going to give him $1,000. All right. Now you have the ability to add $5,000 a year to that account. It's not tax deductible and you can't access the money until they're 18. But it is a way to essentially say, hey, we're going to give kids a head start through this provision of this extra $1,000.
Do the kids pay tax on it when they take the money out?
There's going to be some cleaning up on the law on how that's done. Initially, it was, okay, if it's for a qualifying expense like education or something, they're going to pay capital gains on the growth. If it's a non-qualifying expense, they'll just pay ordinary income tax, just like an IRA.
And we talked about private school earlier, and we talked a little bit about 529s and how that's increased as far as how much you can use to $20,000. The fact that it can be used for some other areas, the certificate, that word, tutoring, speech therapy.
So I touched on this a little bit earlier. I guess I jumped the gun there, but the 529 now allows you to have more areas to use the money for. So when we talk to clients, a lot of it is, well, I can only use it for school. Now, hey, if you tutor your kids, my kids go to tutoring. If you have them in speech therapy or SAT test prep or ACT test prep, you can actually use your 529 plans to pay for those things.
That's great.
As well. Yeah.
That's a big deal. And then let's talk about adoption credit, HSA expansion, and then even scholarships from K through 12. Let's walk through some of those topics.
Yeah. So with the adoption credit, the credit used to be non-refundable. All right. So imagine, for example, if I have a gift card and I go to the store, I use that gift card and I swipe it and it's $100. Okay. If my purchase was $90, all right, they're not going to give me $10 back. They're going to basically say, hey, thanks for your $90 from this gift card. That $10 you have is going to expire. Okay. That's generally how a non-refundable tax credit works.
Right.
In this dynamic, that extra $10, or in this case, up to $5,000 on the adoption credit, you can actually get that back as a refundable credit. All right. So if I have room left on my tax credit, the government will actually give that money back to me. So that's a nice added benefit for folks who are adopting. Also, HSAs, they were only for high deductible health plans. However, if you have a bronze or what's called a catastrophic health plan, you can use an HSA. You can qualify to contribute to an HSA as a result of having those two plans. Also, scholarships, if you're K through 12, sometimes those could have been considered taxable. Now they're not taxable at all. So that's just another just added benefit for probably a small select group of people who are in that situation.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That's excellent. Okay, so a lot of great updates there. What about advanced premium tax credits? How about that?
So this is generally for people who go to the healthcare.gov and they're getting health insurance. The government's going to ask you, well, how much money you think you're going to make? And based on how much money you say you're going to make, that's going to tell them how much should you qualify for in premium tax credits. So the government is subsidizing your health insurance. If you, at the end of the year, said, hey, you know what? I only said I was going to make 30. I'm actually only going to make 100. All right. The government, when you file your tax return, they're going to pull back some of that subsidy. Okay. Now, prior to 2025, you were able to game the system a little bit because you were like, well, look, the government's not going to take all the subsidy back. They're actually going to cap it. All right. So I'm going to just say I make a little bit of money. They're going to give me some subsidy I know I don't qualify for. And then they're going to take back most of the subsidy, but not all of it. Well, now they're going to take back all of it. So if you're a business owner, and this is generally where I see this, if you're a business owner and you do that where you say, hey, I only make 50 grand and you actually make 400. Well, now they're going to take all of that subsidy back, which generally is going to lead you to paying a tax penalty because you're going to probably end up owing on your taxes. And then you're going to end up having to pay interest and penalties on the underpayment of taxes. So that's something that you'll have to adjust if that's something you've done in the past.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so what's new in this one big, beautiful bill when it comes to business owners? We know that you know the whole IRS tax code. You read this 900-page bill. Let's walk through it. All right, let's walk through it. I know you did because you told me. Bonus depreciation for manufacturing and refining buildings. I remember when you and I were on the phone 1.5 months before it actually passed, we were talking about two or three clients that were looking at a manufacturing building. And you were so excited about this pending legislation at that time. Let's talk about this, how this can affect people and their money.
Yeah. So if you are looking to buy a manufacturing building, instead of it being bonus depreciation on items that are 20 years or more, this allows you to deduct the entire building. That's crazy. So, hey, if I drop $3 million on a building, I can deduct 100% of it up front. So now that's only going to be for the next 4 years. So like I said, we're going to have a four-year tax plan for a lot of you business owners out there. But this is something that, hey, if I was planning to build this, or even if I decide to get into real estate, doing it in the manufacturing space could be an alternative strategy for you based on this provision here.
So a lot of strategy that we're going to be working with clients on as it pertains to this specific bill right here, this rule, this law that's in place, again, as Terrence mentioned, for the next 4 years. How do we take advantage of it in an effective and an efficient way to help you and your family with your business? Let's talk about charitable contributions for C corporations specifically.
Yeah, so this is similar to what the individuals faced, where, hey, the first 0.5 income that they gave away is not deductible. So going back to my previous example, if I make $100,000, the first $500 I give away in charitable deductions is not deductible. For a C corporation, it's the first 1%, all right? So, hey, that same $100,000, that $1,000 I gave away, I can't deduct that. All right. So that they just created a new floor, essentially, for charitable deductions that you have to get over to qualify for the tax deduction.
What about R&D? I feel like this is similar to the manufacturing one, right? So we got R&D deduction flexibility.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Yeah. So if you're developing a product, a software, something like that, in the past, based on the new tax law, you were actually having to spread out the expenses from that R&D. Now it goes back to the law before where you can expense 100% of it up front. Okay. So that's big if you're in the R&D space, because generally you're not going to have a whole lot of revenue coming in. So getting as much tax benefits as possible is important. And so if you are in that situation and you're actually spreading out your R&D expenses from prior years, you have the option to just deduct all of them this year in 2025 tax year, or do it over the next 2 years. So that's another strategy to decide, hey, do I want to do it all this year? Do I want to spread it out? And even the credit, you don't have to do it all up front. You could spread it out over 5 years. So new expenses that you're incurring this year, you could spread those out over 5 years, or you can do it in this year.
Awesome. Awesome. Excellent. Let's get into a topic that we deal a lot with here at Sequence Capital Partners. We help people with investment. We help people with taxes. We help people with financial planning. We help people with estate planning. So when we're looking at a client, we look at the holistic picture. We begin every client conversation with the end in mind. The old Stephen Covey, right? Begin with the end in mind, okay? So that's how we work with our families, our entities, et cetera. Qualified opportunity zones, something that we proactively invest in. We search, we vet, we look at literally hundreds of deals across the United States, and we find which one of those make the most sense for our clients. And so let's talk about this because, again, this was in the news a long time, hoping that this would be extended. So 5-year gain exclusion reset. Let's speak to some of these points and go back and forth.
Yeah. So just to give you the Cliff Notes version, with the qualified opportunity zone, the idea the government said is we want people to invest in areas that are generally lower income or that could use some revitalization. And if you have a capital gain, so let's say I sell my business, I sell my real estate. One of the deferrals.
You sell stock, right? Sell
stock, exactly. One of my deferral strategies would be to say, hey, I'm going to invest in an opportunity zone or in an opportunity zone fund. Now, the provision started back in 2018. So it said, hey, look, if you're in this investment for 5 years, you get to exclude 10% of your capital gain originally. So if I had $1 million capital gain, I held it for 5 years, I can exclude $100,000. So that was a huge benefit. If I held it for 7 years, I can exclude 15%. All right. Now, we're at the point in 2025 where we're already eclipsed that 5 and 7 year period. So what the Congress basically did with this provision is says, hey, we're going to reset the clock, and we're going to do that every 10 years. All right. So they brought back that 5-year provision. In 2026, if I sell something and I have that same $1 million gain and I hold it for 5 years, then I can exclude up to 10% of my gain. But what they added was this provision tied to rural areas. All right. So there's obviously rules behind that. But if it's in a rural area, I can exclude 30% of my gain. So that same $1 million, I can exclude $300,000 of gain on it versus the $100,000 initially.
And let me jump in with a couple
of
things there, because we have a couple clients that we're working with specifically that this pertains to them when it comes to the rural zone. And a couple of those, just for those that are watching and listening, it has to be a area that has less than 50,000 person population. And the median income has to be less than $80,000, right? That's important to also note. Definitely work with us if we are working with you, or we'd love to be introduced to you and your family and whoever you partner with as far as your professional services folks, your CPAs, et cetera. But work with your professional services folks. Make sure they understand the bill, all the details of it, because this is one that there are a lot of benefits if you know what you're doing and you really maximize this. So anything else on the qualified opportunity zones?
Yeah. So the only thing I'll add, one, the reinvestment amount. So generally, in order to get the exclusion, you have to reinvest. And at the time, it was 100% of your basis. Okay. So now you only have to reinvest 50%. So if you put $1 million in, you only have to reinvest $500,000. So that is a lot less restrictive as far as the reinvestment amount. Now, this is something I expect the IRS to come and clean up a bit, because the bill reads as if you have to hold it for 30 years. As far as Congress said, that wasn't their understanding. So the second part of the benefit is, let's say we put that $1 million in, I hold it for 5 years, I get my 10% exclusion. So I pay tax on $900,000 instead of the million. And then if that million grows to 5 million, 10 million, that additional gain, I don't pay tax on it if I hold it for 10 years.
Yes, that's gone.
Right. That's the huge benefit on the back end. Now, the law is written as if it says it's a 30-year hold. So I'm sure they're going to come through and clean that language up to where it's still going to be a 10-year hold as far as the timeline. But that is something where the intent, it seemed as if it was still to have the 10-year holding period versus a 30-year hold. But most people aren't looking to hold for 3 years per se without the option to exclude the gain over that time.
That's right. That's right. Let's shift over to a couple last areas. Your qualified small business stock. This is big. This is big. Let's walk through this one. Of course, lower holding periods to exclude gain, right? That's a big deal here.
Yeah. So this is going to be a probably a big decision for a lot of companies that are just starting, or you might have a current structure, as we do what we would call exit planning, which is generally a 3 to 5 year conversation with the business owner to think, hey, you know what? I'm going to look at exiting my business. What do I need to do over the next 3 to 5 years to get it in its best position to sell? Well, one of the things you could consider is changing it from being a pass-through entity, like a partnership or an S corporation, and making it a C corporation. The reason you might do that is if your business is less than 50 million, which they actually raised that to 75 million. So if your business is less than 75 million and you change over to the C corporation structure and then you sell it in the future. So these are going to be non-specified trades or businesses. So sorry for us advisors in the finance space, it doesn't qualify for us. But if you're a construction company or a software company or something like that, and you have an exit, you get to exclude up to $10 million of gain on your exit. So similar to how the qualified opportunity zone works to an extent, but it's a 5-year hold. So let's say, just for math, my $1 million company, I change to a C corp and then I sell it for $11 million. All right. After 5 years, I don't have to pay any taxes. That was the old law. What they brought in is say, hey, look, if you hold it for 3 years, you can exclude up to 50% of your gain.
Yeah.
So if I have a $5 million gain and I have a 3-year hold, I can exclude $2.5 million. Or if I have a 4-year hold, I can exclude 75% of my gain. So it just adds in a 2 extra layers that says, hey, if you didn't do the full 5-year hold, you could still get an exclusion of some of the gain that you have. So this will be interesting for some business owners looking at that exit conversation. Do I change my entity structure and am I eligible for this QSBS treatment?
Let's talk about farmers. We're in the Midwest here, right? We have clients who are farmers. I'm in the Midwest. You're in the South. We have farmers all over the nation, of course. And there's definitely some pretty attractive parts of the bill that pertain to farmers. Talk about that.
Yeah. So being in Dallas, I was looking through the bill. Like you said, it's 870 pages. So all of it doesn't apply to everyone, obviously. And so I was trying to only pull out the stuff that I felt like the mass majority of people would do. So I looked at this provision and I was like, farming, Dallas, not a thing. But I think, hold on, right. My partner's in Omaha. Everyone's next door neighbor has a farm basically there. So we added this for the people. Okay. So this is just for you and the people.
Hold on. It's a million. We just hit 1 million people in Omaha.
Okay.
We're now a big city.
They're a big city. Okay. It's a big city with a small town feel. Okay. As they say.
That's
all right. So if you're a farmer out there and you've owned your farm for 10 years and you plan to sell to someone who also is going to own the farm for 10 years, and you have a gain on your farm, you get to spread out paying that gain over 4 years without any additional penalties. All right. So that's important because obviously if you don't have to pay your taxes now, you get to use the money in the meantime. So not that you're going to just go and go to Vegas per se with your tax gain money, but you could defer when you have to pay it. So that'll just come to a lot of farmers where they get to strategize their next moves, knowing that they don't have to put 100% of their money back into taxes after the sale of their farm.
Big deal. That's a big deal. So, well, hey, Terrence, appreciate you, sir. Appreciate the opportunity to walk through this one big, beautiful bill together. And hopefully you guys have enjoyed listening to some of the highlights. And please reach out to us at StevensCapitalPartners.com. We look forward to connecting with you. We want to add value to you and your family. And we are so fortunate to be able to do what we do for you. And so thanks so much. Have a great day.